The real risks now stemming from the continued war with Iran and the closure of the Strait of Hormuz are downstream risks from the core output commodities that you're all familiar with. So let's talk about that. Of course, liquid natural gas is one of the core commodities. The Ras Laffan gas field out of Qatar is still not functioning since March, by the way. And two of those trains have a 3 to 5 year repair time. So there's also a very long tail risk of an extended restart time window for a lot of these things to come back online. But what's downstream from natural gas? This is critical to understand. So aluminum smelting is one of the downstream results of natural gas. And that's because aluminum smelting is extremely energy intensive. And this is why some of the largest aluminum smelters in the world are located in the Middle East, where they have access to the natural gas energy. So remember that, you know, mining aluminum, you don't get it out of the ground in a pure form, obviously. You get it out in rock, basically, or just, you know, looks like rock, looks like large chunks of gravel or whatever, and then you have to smelt the aluminum out of that. That is extremely energy intensive. And when you don't have the energy, you can't do the smelting. This is why aluminum prices are already skyrocketing around the world. So if you don't have affordable high volumes of aluminum, then, you know, how do you make aircraft? How do you make weapon systems? How do you make cars? You know, how do you make Teslas? Because the Gigafactory is using like a unified aluminum frame that's stamped out all at once. Well, it's not just stamped out. I mean, they melt the aluminum and push it into a mold, basically. But you have to have high volumes of relatively cheap aluminum in order to make these other products. No aluminum, no cars, no aircraft, and lots of other things that depend on aluminum, such as conductive cabling for data centers, for example. You know, it's not just copper, it's also a lot of aluminum. So keep your eyes on the aluminum commodity, because those prices will continue to rise as scarcity worsens. Now, other downstream things. Phosphate fertilizers, for example. We talk about nitrogen fertilizers, but and nitrogen, of course, created through the Haber-Bosch process, which also uses natural gas as the energy source in order to extract and effectively crack nitrogen out of the atmosphere. Because, you know, almost 80% of the atmospheric air is nitrogen, but it's bound up as N2, nitrogen with nitrogen, and it takes a tremendous amount of heat and pressure in order to break that molecular bond. So that's where natural gas comes into play. That's why, again, the nitrogen processing plants that create things like urea are also, many of them are located in the Middle East. But phosphate fertilizers use a different downstream process, and that is sulfuric acid. So when you refine oil that is considered sour oil, sour means high sulfur content. That's really all it means. So a sour oil has to have sulfur removed. Removing the sulfur results in the creation of a massive sulfur stockpile. And remember, there are, of course, oil refineries all throughout the Middle East and elsewhere around the world, but a lot of them are located in the Middle East, obviously, and, you know, Russia too. I'm not dismissing that. I'm just saying there's a heavy concentration of oil processing in the Middle East because that's where a lot of the oil comes from. So they end up with these large stockpiles of sulfur. And then when you modify the sulfur, you get sulfuric acid. The sulfuric acid is what's necessary to process raw mined phosphate rock into phosphorus that's suitable for fertilizers. So without the sulfuric acid, you can't get the phosphorus out of the rock because you have to dissolve the rock. And sulfuric acid is very good at doing that. So you think about nitrogen and phosphorus as two of the most important materials in agriculture, we're talking about global food production here, both of those are under a chokehold right now because of Trump's war against Iran, which he continues to escalate as well. So these downstream effects are going to result in, of course, global, well, famine around the world, but not everywhere in the world. So I don't think we'll see mass famine in the United States, but we will see widespread famine in Southeast Asia, in countries like Somalia, in Yemen. We're going to see food scarcity get a lot worse in India even, but especially places like Bangladesh and the sub-Saharan Africa, lots of nations there as well. Maybe even Egypt could be impacted by this to some extent. So those are some of the downstream effects just stemming from, you know, fertilizer materials. Now, what will hit the United States is the downstream supply chain shortage of diesel and jet fuel, because refining those products requires you to use a heavier crude oil, such as the kind of oil that comes from out of the Urals in Russia, or the kind of oil that comes out of Saudi Arabia or also Iran, but not so much the sweet light crude that we get out of the United States for the most part. So the oil that we get in the U.S. is the lighter oil, which is great for refining into lighter products such as gasoline and also naphtha, which we'll talk about naphtha here in a second. But diesel and jet fuel are much more efficiently processed out of the heavier oils, and also the refineries that we have in the United States are set up to process those heavier oils. And that's the kind of oil that comes out of Venezuela as well, at least that's my understanding. So you can't just take a refinery that's configured for producing gasoline and that's used to handling light, sweet, crude inputs. You can't just take that and then say the next day, oh, we're going to make diesel out of this and we're going to process heavy oil, you know, high sulfur content oil. It doesn't work that way. You could switch over refineries over a period of maybe a year or two, but not overnight. Now, there are also downstream effects from the helium shortage. You may know that helium is used in medical imaging, MRIs in particular. But did you also know that helium is used in microchip manufacturing and high bandwidth memory and the kinds of hardware that are necessary to support the AI bubble, the whole AI infrastructure build out? Those data centers, they depend on supplies that are manufactured, you know, microchips and memory manufactured using helium. Well, a significant portion of the helium, something like, I think, 25%, comes out of the Persian Gulf. And the second largest source of helium is China. And China just announced a ban on helium exports because of the global helium shortage that's taking place. Now, my laboratory, which is a food science lab, running multiple mass spec instruments, we also use helium in those instruments. And as you know, I purchased a year's supply of helium in March because I knew that this was coming, but very few labs purchased helium ahead of time. So now they're running into severe helium restrictions. So this is hitting hospitals and MRI centers, medical imaging, as well as laboratories and microchip manufacturing. Could that throw a wrench into the AI bubble? Yeah. And then there's naphtha. So naphtha is this lighter distilled hydrocarbon that is used. You can crack naphtha to make polypropylene, different kinds of plastics that are used in the food packaging industry, for example, all across, you know, grocery stores and foods and supplements and so on. Naphtha is also used, it's mixed with gasoline, or it's mixed with the feedstock products to make gasoline. Naphtha is used to make various solvents and certain types of lighter lubricants, for example. So without naphtha, then you have a problem with your food packaging industry. You have a problem making gasoline. You have a problem with some medical device manufacturing as well. So naphtha is one of these near universal molecules that's necessary to power modern civilization. and it's just one of many. And by the way, there's also a polyethylene shortage that's happening now. So if you don't have enough polyethylene, then, you know, I mean, think about all the things that are made from PE, from storage and transportation drums that hold liquids, to food packaging, to those little rings that are the fittings for plumbing on PEX pipes and everything. You know, without polyethylene, you can't build homes. You can't really run a food manufacturing facility. You know, you can't make a lot of medical devices. You can't make a lot of military devices and so on. Polyethylene has become one of the core materials of our modern society. You know, it's rugged. It's also slightly flexible and pliable. It resists cracking. It resists UV. You know, sunlight exposure doesn't destroy it, etc. It's incredibly useful. And a lot of that comes out of the Persian Gulf. But, you know, not anymore. So really, when you put all of this together and you start looking at the downstream effects of all of these key materials and molecules, you come to realize that this isn't just a supply shock of one or two things. This is a supply shock of many of the base materials on which modern human civilization functions. Without these materials, you can't run a modern society. And so, if this war continues, the civilization cannot function. Not at the current scale. Something has to give. Something has to be radically downsized in order for our world to function on, you know, a fraction of the supply that we are used to. So let me ask you this question. What has to give in order to function on a fraction of the fertilizer that we were used to? Well, clearly, population. Because how are you going to feed 8 billion people if you lose, you know, 30% of your fertilizer, or more like 33%, a third? How are you going to feed the world? Well, you can't, actually. How are you going to fuel the world? You know, how are you going to fuel the transportation? The trucks that deliver the goods to the grocery store? Or the jets that provide air transport? How are you going to fuel them if you don't have the fuel? Well, you can't. So you have to start cutting transportation. Ultimately, the entire world here, if we don't get this back to normal, which seems almost impossible at this point, the world is going to have to downsize. It's going to have to downsize its economy, its industry, its population, its farming, food production, you know, manufacturing of technology, you know, medical operations, just you name it. All of that is going to have to be downsized. And what goes along with that is, of course, in many countries, an unreliable power grid, a massive global loss of jobs. You simply won't have the jobs because the industry isn't functioning, you see. The industry doesn't have energy. The industry doesn't have raw materials. You're going to have a global contraction that will be far worse than the Great Depression. It's a global collapse. And along with that global collapse, you will have, as you might expect, a social uprising. You'll have revolts. You'll have political strife. You'll have revolutions and wars. Wars over resources, wars over food, wars over water. And by the way, without cheap, abundant energy, how are you going to move water? How are you going to desalinate water? How are you going to run the farms? And the answer is, you know, you can't. And I'm not saying that everything collapses. No, I've given you numbers here. In some cases, it's a 20% reduction in, let's say, global oil. It's a 25% reduction in LNG. It's a 33% reduction in fertilizer. For some of these, it can be up to a 50% reduction in polyethylene, for example. But these are the ranges that we're dealing with. So somewhere between, let's say, 20% and 50% of the world that we know today will have to cease to exist to match the output restrictions from the Strait of Hormuz. So, yes, what I'm saying is effectively what Trump is putting into play here is a global population reduction plan that inevitably will see anywhere from 20 to 50% of the world's current population gone. You know, death through not just famine and starvation, but, you know, war and strife and lack of access to energy, lack of employment, followed by all kinds of social ramifications, etc. So that's the upshot of this. It's not just that we're lacking some oil and that gas prices are going to go up. No, we're talking about a global catastrophe that can only be brought back into homeostasis through a global population reduction of at minimum 20%. So, and probably closer to 25%. So we're talking about close to 2 billion people dying as a result of Trump's war, which would make this, over 300 times worse than the Holocaust of World War II, something like that. So Trump would be, I guess, historically 300 times worse than Hitler in terms of the number of people that he kills. How about that? 300 Hitlers. Yeah, pretty bad. So how can we stop that scenario? Well, we have to get back to peace. We have to get back to trade. We have to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, which is never going to happen under U.S. control. That's clear. The way that Trump could actually save the world from his own wars is to leave the Middle East, walk away, and then things could get back to normal and we wouldn't have that scenario that I just described. We could recover. There'll still be some level of famine in 2027, but it wouldn't be, you know, a wipeout level. So if you want to help save the world, just call for peace and call for the removal of Trump, who's clearly a delusional madman, full of himself, who thinks that he's ordained by God to save the world while he's actually destroying it. He needs to be removed from power. 25th Amendment or whatever is appropriate. But join me in calling for peace, and you can follow my work at brightvideos.com. You can get prepared for more chaos and collapse with a number of methods. Check out our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store, sat123.com. Not only do they have satellite phones, but they have, you know, power stations, solar generators, Faraday bags, and things like that. But also visit our online store, healthrangerstore.com, for backup, long-term storable food supplies, as well as personal care products and nutritional supplements, things that can help you stay alive during this time of extreme turmoil that will last for years to come. This won't be over overnight. This is already going to bleed well into 2027, 2028. I mean, gosh, you know, the LNG repair time just at the Qatar Ras Laffan is 3 to 5 years. Okay. So, you know, that's going to push us into 2030. Before we can even think about getting back to normal. So this is going to be a multi-year supply chain catastrophe, and that's already determined. That's not a what if. That's done. So prepare for a multi-year era of chaos. And thank you for listening. Yeah, happy day. You know, hey, I'm not trying to get you down. I'm not trying to be a doomer. I'm just trying to be realistic about all of this. Like, where is this actually going? That's all. I want you to be prepared. I want you to make it through this. I want you to achieve abundance and safety and security. I want you to live through this and do well. And that means facing the reality of where we are. And we're in a tough spot right now. So thank you for listening. Mike Adams here, the Health Ranger, naturalnews.com, and also brightvideos.com. Take care.
Unlock the power of organic turmeric root powder for good health that starts with every scoop. It's non-GMO, non-China, gluten-free, and certified organic because you deserve only the purest. Shop now at healthrangerstore.com.